Hello, friends. Welcome to this week's Recovery Radio Show. I'm Radio Johnny, and our show this week is a recording of the Community Conversation event hosted by the Lata Recovery Center at the 1912 Center last Thursday, December 2nd. It featured speakers from the Moscow Faith Community, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, Gritman Hospital, Weeks and V-Tree Counseling, Scott Community Care, the Moscow School District, the University of Idaho, and the Lata County Sheriff's Office. The point of the event was to inform the public in general what services are available in Moscow and the surrounding area for coping with the recent events, and a question and answer session with those service providers. We hope you enjoy the program and share the information with friends and neighbors. The show will be available for download on the Lata Recovery Center website at latarecoverycenter.org.
I want to thank everybody for coming out today. Our format for the today's community conversation is going to be very, very simple. Each one of you has seen a sheet that looks like this that explains how we're doing things. And really, all we're doing is we're asking each one of the speakers to answer three questions. Those three questions are, what services can you provide to those in our community experiencing anxiety or other mental health symptoms as a result of recent events? Number two, who can you provide services to? University students, the general public, etc. And number three, what is the waiting period? So all we're going to do is I'm going to hand the microphone off to, I'll start with Bruce. He's going to answer those three questions, and then he's going to hand the microphone off, and so on and so forth, right down the way, until we get to Officer Kyle Garlin, and he's going to talk a little bit about personal safety in addition to those other things. Then at the end, we'll have a Q&A for anybody that's got questions from the audience. I'm going to get out of the way now.
Thank you, Daryl. Again, my name is Bruce Pittman, and I think that my task is to very briefly represent some of the services that are available through faith communities. And I'd simply say that people come to healing and comfort in many different ways. And for some, going through faith communities and religious practices are incredibly important to their healing processes. And I am not here to represent all of the congregations and the different faith expressions in Moscow, but I simply have some general offerings and then a couple of specific examples. I think that for those folks who are not students, but also students, faith communities are available through a variety of services. And one is pastoral counseling. We can make a phone call to a church and make an appointment and talk to the pastor. Some churches have small group grief groups that are available that are incredibly important. There are other churches that have individuals, lay people within their congregations who are trained listeners, who are available for anything as light as coffee conversations to much more in-depth conversations about grief and loss. Another service that faith communities provide, and particularly this time of year, is that there are a couple examples of churches that are holding events. And specifically, these are annual events that help people who are grieving as we're going into the holidays. And specifically, the Presbyterians will have a service of remembrance this Tuesday at 7 o'clock in the sanctuary for those who are grieving and going into the holidays in a very difficult way. St. Mark's also has a service on December 21st for those people who are grieving and experiencing loss. So those are some very specific examples. I would like to note specifically for college students that for those who have a strong desire for spiritual support right now, the Campus Christian Center, also St. Augie's, and the LDS Center are also places of solace and counseling and support. There are also a number of student organizations, faith-based student organizations, that are doing that work. The answer is in terms of how quickly most of these folks are going to be quite responsive, give them a phone call, and they'll set up an appointment. Thank you.
My name is Doug Slott. I work with Department of Health and Welfare here in town. Kind of the only full-time Moscow employee designated for a lot of the health and welfare services that we try to provide. Health and welfare has been changing over the last forever, but over the last year specifically and the kind of services we do provide, at this time the services that we provide do include crisis services and community contacts, as I'm remembering Daryl's questions he was asking us. And we will see people who are needing some help processing grief and loss and stress and anxiety, depression. Our forte, what we do, what we're all really good at, and what our statutory commitment is for helping people with identified mental illness, such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depressive disorder, things of that nature. But we do extend beyond that to help people who are in crisis for whatever reason, whatever's going on in their life, whether it's related to murders that occurred recently or for other reasons, financial or whatever other reasons are going on in their life. And those services are, you know, stabilization, referral to community resources, making them aware of what's available in Moscow to help them and help them, you know, get through what they're going through. And then continuing to follow them too as needed until they feel like they've been transitioned to longer-term care or until they feel better. We have our office up there over next to the cemetery on Troy Highway, 1350 Troy Highway, and we do both the walk-in services. People can come in and just say they want to talk to somebody, or we have a designated crisis line that's 24/7. That a lot of that has rolled over to the new 988 system. And so people will, if they call, especially after hours, they'll get the 988 system, which can provide them further support, direction, services, care, whatever they need. But during the day, mostly, if you reach us, we can provide whatever help and services are necessary, including, like I said, crisis stabilization or referral to community resources or just talking to a human being. I think that's all I had to say. If I think of something more, maybe you can roll back to me. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Joyce Lyons. I work for Public Health, and we hold the contract for the crisis center here in Moscow and across the region, one in Liston, one in Orfino. And we are available 24/7. Your waiting period is about as long as it takes you to dial our number and get to the right location. We're available 24/7. You're invited in. You can walk in. If it's after the center's hours, when you call, we'll have staff that come and meet you there. You're afforded 23 hours and 59 minutes to stabilize and get connected with community services, de-escalate whatever crisis you're experiencing. It's called a behavioral health crisis center, but you don't have to be diagnosed with a behavioral health issue or a mental illness. What you have to do is be experiencing a crisis. And we have seen people whose crisis is they can't tell their mom and dad that they're failing their music class at the University of Idaho. Or, you know, that we've talked with people who want access to other resources, and we can be that funneling source too. No one's turned away. Unfortunately, we don't have a crisis center for youth. However, we have had age groups 16 to 18 come in for access to resources or in crisis. And what we do is we talk with them. We don't admit them to the center, but we get them connected with who they need to be connected with in the community. I think that's especially important in dealing with our college population because some of those kids aren't quite 18 yet, too. We do provide services for college students and citizens alike. If you live in Latah, Nez Perce, or, Clearwater, Lewis, or Idaho County, you can receive services through the Crisis Center. We have actually had people here in the Moscow Center from the Coeur d'Alene area who have said it's easier to get in and get services with us here. So no waiting period. We do have, we coordinate services and we partner with the Recovery Center and Daryl's staff. And so he actually has staff that are, during business hours, the greeters or the intake people for the crisis center. And so you may see someone from that little group in the back row over here, if you walk into the crisis center, being the first person you see and work with. It's been really good there because a lot of people come in crisis, and one of the best referrals we have is to the services that the Recovery Center provides. That doesn't mean we also do case management, and that's that same little group of people in the back row there, for that period of time to get connected with the appropriate services in the community. So if the counseling agency that they have chosen can't set up the assessment and all of the processes that they have to go through for 3 weeks, we can see them and make sure that they stay stable during that period of time. We can coordinate with a CHAS clinic if they need to be hooked up to medical services. We get referrals from the college counseling center, our colleagues down here. We get a lot of referrals from Gripman, through someone who's come into the ER for totally different things, and their screening is exceptional. And they'll call, and sometimes we'll go down and pick them up. Sometimes they'll just walk up to the center and meet with us and see what we have that we can help them with. So, number one, no waiting period. We take all people that come through the door and try and help them with whatever their situation is. We try and get them connected with the right resources in the community. So, did I tell you about our the recovery center, Vandal Recovery, on campus? While they're, thank you, Miranda. She said no. that we have the recovery center has a satellite office on campus, and they do a great job with students who are having a problem with substances, et cetera, and building community on campus. They have also been instrumental in identifying crises that are happening on campus and getting those students to the crisis center so that we can help deal with what's going on there. We have a great relationship with the counseling center on campus and the dean of students' office, who've been very supportive in what we're doing in the recovery and crisis center here in Moscow. So any questions? I have left information on the back counter, not just for the crisis center, but for some juvenile and adolescent services that are available in our area for crisis. And one that my colleague Chris Saldana provided, that's just how to talk to somebody that's having some difficulties. And we find in the crisis center, and I think all of the counselors and service providers here will agree that sometimes all you need is somebody to talk to. So pick up trash and trinkets on the back table and let us know if we can help you.
Thank you. My name is Jane Groff. I'm Director of Case Management at Gripman Medical Center.
My name is Erica Jensen. I am a social worker. I work at Gripman, but I don't provide individual counseling. Part of my role is to provide support and crisis debriefing for our staff and our providers that are providing care for individuals are working today. So Gripman recognizes that community mental health is a priority. We've expanded our mental health services quite a bit, and they continue to grow right now. We also recognize that with the current events in the community, that has increased stress for people. We know that this kind of stress and trauma sometimes manifests as physical ailments, so fatigue, headaches, anxiety, those kind of things that people may need to come into the emergency department for. It might also be manifesting as sleeplessness or having a hard time focusing. It might be affecting people's daily lives, and so we want to really recognize that. We have emergency services, of course, at the emergency department if someone is experiencing anxiety to a level of physical ailment or just not being able to help themselves with decreasing their own anxiety. Also, if you have someone that you're working with or yourself that is feeling like you're potentially going to have self-harm, we would want people to go to the emergency department. We also have a licensed professional counselor through the clinics and a licensed clinical social worker that both provide individual counseling and brief behavioral interventions.
So we do offer services to the University of Idaho students and the community abroad. Anyone who wants to come to our emergency department or urgent care for help. We do have the waiting period at urgent care, and the emergency department would be depending on the number of other patients there. They do triage the patients, so if you're having an issue that is a severe crisis, could be triaged ahead of other people. As far as our counselors, they are referred to by one of the Gripman providers, and they will get you in as soon as possible. You can look up gritman.org/mental health, and you'll see information on our counselors online and some additional information about mental health.
Hi, I'm Melanie Scott. I'm the administrator for Scott Community Care. We provide counseling and community-based services to adults and children in Moscow. We do serve the student population and anyone that needs services. Currently, our ability to get people in is pretty limited, but we've been able to handle any of the calls thus far we've received with individuals in crisis concerning this event in the community. The other thing we do is we also are the provide the clinical support to the crisis center, and so if we're not able to get somebody in crisis in with us quickly, we will work with them also down there.
Hi, I'm Kathy Weeks from Weeks and Vitry Counseling. Our agency provides mental health counseling as well as substance abuse counseling, combination thereof. We work primarily with adults, people over 18, but occasionally we do see teens also, not young children, but teenagers and adults primarily. We accept most insurances. I currently have two interns, and so we don't charge for their services, and that's also helped our availability, having that extra staff. So waiting period right now is, especially if people identify that they're having difficulty with the situation, we will get them in pretty quickly. My staff is willing and wanting, actually, to work extra time, to put in extra hours to fulfill whatever need there is. If a person is a first responder and wants services with that, if they identify that when they call in, then we will get them in as quickly as they want to get in or can get in. And so, like I say, we're pretty committed to trying to fulfill whatever need there is in the community right now. And we do work with university students. We can work with university students, faculty, as well as people in the community.
Hello, my name is Kai, and I'm with A Body and Mind Health Services. We provide individual counseling services as well as community-based services like Scott Community Care. We primarily work with teens and adults in person. We do have telehealth providers all over the state, though, so in particular for university students that may be in Moscow for part of the year and then in, you know, Boise, Coeur d'Alene, somewhere else for the other part of the year. Our providers are very used to going between in-person and telehealth, and we're happy to provide that. Over telehealth, we do have some counselors that will see younger kids. As far as our wait time right now, we will schedule as soon as you call in, depending on preferences for male or female counselor, insurance, things like that. It might be a few weeks before that initial session, but we are happy to schedule as soon as we get the call.
My name is Nate Anglin. I am a pastor at Bridge Bible Fellowship, and I oversee the counseling ministries there. We currently have, I am full-time for just the purpose of counseling, but we have a team of like five biblical counselors at various levels of availability. Some of them are just lay counselors that are willing to meet with people. And so the resource that we provide is free to anyone that is seeking out biblical wisdom. And essentially, our approach to counseling is really taking the issues of life and applying them to biblical truth and helping people to get God's truth into the real struggles of life. And there's amazing answers about anxiety, about depression, about forgiveness, many of the things that we are currently just grappling with as a community. So the current wait for that is none. So we have people willing to talk with you and to meet with you. I have, there's business cards in the back there. Grab one of those or hit me up. Or you can simply Google, as we all do, Biblical Counseling Moscow. And I believe our website is number 3 on the list. And so it's bridgebiblefellowship.org/counseling. And you can actually sign up for biblical counseling through our website. And so it's a pretty easy way to jump in. But thank you for listening.
Hello, I'm Greg Bailey. I'm the superintendent of Moscow School District. We base our decisions off of five points, and in this order. One is safety. Two is making sure kids feel a sense of belonging. Three is the education. Four is additional opportunities, such as extracurricular activities, things like that. And the fifth one is making sure that our kids are good citizens when they leave our school. But mainly, I'll talk about the first three. First thing we make sure that happens in our school is safety. We are, you know, continuing to look on a daily basis, how can we make our schools even safer? We have put in security cameras. We have door locks into our facilities. We practice a lot of scenarios throughout the year. The other thing we watch for, and this kind of goes into the second one, is a sense of belonging. We make sure our students feel comfortable at school, as well as we look at, and I always remind the teachers, watch for that shaken can. And the shaken can is the student that is, you know, behavior has just changed a little bit. They're kind of like that can that you're scared to open, but because they're going to explode and you don't know why. Because we know that kids come to school with some issues that might have happened at home, and we try to catch them before they have an outburst or something and talk to them. But with that, we have 9 counselors in our school system, as well as 3 school psychs. We also have a crisis team that we use in case of any type of scenario where there's a large group of students or that death in our school system or any type of scenario that has a lot of our students upset. We also will use that and offer that crisis team for our other schools, our charter schools, even private schools if they want, as well as some schools out in other communities. We, in educational part, we do look at our social emotional well-being of our students. We do quite a few programs. A lot of it is just based off how to treat each other, how to watch out for your fellow classmates and so forth. We also just continually to work with giving the kids a lot of opportunities to enjoy themselves while they're at school. We have so many different clubs and organizations that really try to help them out. A lot of this is all in the sense of trying to help the kids feel comfortable at school, as well as deal with situations of grief. But that's what we have to offer. We, as soon as a kid wants to come talk to our counselors, we try to schedule that as quickly as possible. If a parent has the ability to ask our counselors to check on their child, but we look for that shaken can as well. So,
hi everyone. I'm Maureen Marchant, and I'm the clinical social worker at the Counseling and Testing Center at U of I. And so clearly our main mission is to serve the students, but in the last couple weeks we've been responsive to faculty and staff on a limited capacity, and then the university did bring in some additional support for the staff and faculty. So that is our main mission. We do have some community involvement in the capacity that if you are having, for instance, the restaurant Mad Greek, they asked our staff to come in and do an intervention with their staff and a grief process with them. And that's helpful for them, but that's a different level of what their business is experiencing. So there is some limited capacity of that. But if there's several of your employees that are experiencing something and you feel like you need some help with that, who are, you know, particularly students who are affected, don't hesitate to reach out and contact us. Right now, our wait time is 0. Added additional crisis response each day in the iSub, and we've had students come in, students who are doing just great and go to class, and then it's not. And they have that moment of, I'm feeling this. And so it's been really helpful. It's kind of unprecedented. Usually after really big incidents like this, we'll have a very little crisis response right away, but students are accessing this. And so students are experiencing this on a very different level, obviously. Another resource that I think could be very helpful for the community is if you do go to our website, and you go to the Counseling and Tests, or the CTC under the U of I, There is a how to support students, and we have a pretty comprehensive list about sudden loss, grief and homicide. Grief and homicide is very different way of processing grief. There's some podcasts, there's some videos, because we know that grief shows up at various times, and students, it's not always 9 to 5, and so we're really directing students to be able to use some of these services. Typically, we've been very, very lucky this year. We are fully staffed, so that helped us in our kind of management of initial appointments. Usually, a person can get in within less than 10 days on a regular schedule, and that's just for an initial appointment. But right now, students are getting in as soon as they call up, pretty much within the same day. We have crisis appointments over in the ISA, but then, of course, over at the CTC each day. So that's us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Carrie Feely. I'm the Associate Dean of Students at the University of Idaho. Clearly, I'm in the Dean of Students' office, which is located up on the second floor of the iSub. Primarily, our role is to serve our students in a variety of ways. I think a lot of people think that the Dean of Students' office is a place for students who get in trouble go, but we actually provide significantly more services for students who are in different levels of crisis or different levels of need. We also serve their families. We have a lot of parents who call and ask for assistance in how to have conversations around this. So we've linked off of the CTC website to provide some resources. And also, you know, how to help those parents navigate their own fears and their own emotional response to this and not put all of that on the students and allow them to make the decision that's right for them in terms of where they wanted to finish school for the remainder of the semester. What is their plan for spring semester? Things like that. So we've been very busy the last couple weeks helping families determine what their next steps are going to be, helping students navigate the academic communications as well, and we'll do some support on their behalf, reaching out to faculty if needed, and provide some additional support. We have 3 case managers in our office, so they're the ones that provide the most immediate response to students. We also have the ability for students to walk in and get support right away. If they already have a relationship with one of our case managers, it may take a little more time to come in, but we really do make sure that we understand the resources in the community. We do a lot of referrals to everyone that's already spoken up here, and we really couldn't do our work without understanding all of the resources within the community as well.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sergeant Kyle Gearline. I'm with the Latah County Sheriff's Office. And then as far as touching on the 3 questions, essentially we could refer you or direct you to the appropriate person that you would need up on this stage or center, and we can help facilitate. We've driven people to the crisis center or to Gritman, depending on what the issue is or what's going on. And we provide services to everyone within our county. If you call us from within city limits, you'll likely be directed to the Moscow Police Department. However, out in the county, our time frame is, as far as coming to help you and come to your aid, will be depending on our location and your location. And then as far as touching on improving your own personal safety, first and foremost, I would say lock your doors to your house, know who has access to your house if there's multiple keys or if you have a code. Understand and be aware of who has that code, and I mean, change it if you don't know how many people have it, or if you move into a new place, change your locks as well. And then just be aware when you're out in public, be aware of your surroundings, get your head out of your phone if you're walking around, kind of see and know what's going on around you. I've heard it addressed before, walk in pairs if you can, walk in pairs, and just maintain that, like I said, awareness of what's going on. And then, I just wanted to touch again on the houses. I know the Ring system or any camera system is recommended. Alarm system recommended, just anything to improve your personal safety within your home and your security there. Does anyone have any other questions or comments on personal safety that they wanted me to address?
So I want to thank everybody on the roundtable for coming. You guys made this really simple for me to put together. I sent out, I think it was one mass email to you guys, and I think about 90% of the people responded yes, they wanted to participate. And that's just fantastic. So that's the main part of the presentation. I thought we would do a Q&A. So does anybody have any questions for anybody? So Doug, how do your services differ from the crisis center services?
Well, I think that that's kind of hard to differentiate. If and often a lot of times we do refer people to the crisis center if they need to see somebody, I would say generally after hours and in person. I think that would be the thing that pops in my head as a distinction. After hours, our phone stuff rolls over to 988, and that's not going to be an in-person service unless 988 person directs them to like the crisis center or ER or similar. We will see people during the day that contact us in person in crisis if necessary. And I think another distinction, well, maybe Joyce can speak to this too, because she's more familiar. But that if people need something longer for stabilization, like because they can stay there for up to 24 hours almost. And so if like they need to talk to somebody to figure things out or to get some stabilization, that's going to be like an hour or two or some kind of an escort to a service or whatever it takes. But if it's going to be something prolonged, like I need to get away from an abusive situation or develop a feeling of safety that's going to take 6, 7, 8 hours or something like that, then that would be more appropriate for them to go to the crisis center. That answer your question? Okay.
Are there any more questions? Yes, ma'am.
I saw this advertised on Facebook this morning and figured I had to come over. I represent an organization. It's a national organization called HOPE, and we're crisis response teams, dogs and humans. And we actually have been working with the University of Idaho. When this crisis happened, I called over and was sent to the dean's office, talked to Carrie, and we deployed, was it that day? Yeah. So we have like 6 or 7 teams that are here in Pullman and Moscow. We have more teams up in Spokane. Some of them came down and helped out also. But I wanted to make people aware that we exist. We try to get the word out, but we don't always touch everybody. Not everybody knows about us. So I brought some brochures and that with us so that people, we work with alternatives to violence. So the police, we work on intakes for domestic violence, persons that are affected by that or other things. And we've gone to court with people. We have deployed at school systems up in Spokane a lot. We don't seem to have as much interaction with our local school systems, which I would like to make that grow a little bit. We've gone to places where students have been killed in car wrecks, where teachers have died of cancer, gone to the classrooms, those kind of things. So we can offer a whole array of services. Our dogs start out as therapy dogs, and then they go through an assessment to see if they would be, the person of the dog would be able to do this work. And then we go through a workshop to be trained in mental health, all kinds of different services that we can do. And we have to keep maintaining our certification every year. So I do, like I said, I have business cards, I have brochures if anyone's interested. We would love to help out the community as much as we can.
Thank you so much for coming. Does anybody else have any questions?
I'm a reporter with the Moscow Pullman Daily News. I'm just curious, have any of your organizations seen an increase in people seeking help in the past 3 weeks? And do you think that's connected to the murders?
I'll bet Carrie has an answer.
Yes. Yes, we've been very busy. Obviously, it has impacted the university community tremendously. And I think students who normally would understand their resources and can navigate things pretty well through the trauma of this just need assistance and help. And some of them went home right away and said, can you just please help me reach out to faculty and help me get some flexibility? And the university response has been incredible to help our students. And faculty and their ability to pivot so quickly to accommodate a lot of our students in ways, you know, I think they had to put their COVID response back on and say, okay, how are we going to do all of this online? And it's been incredible and a heavy lift for everyone in the university community. And it'll continue. Like, I think we're still figuring out how the long-term effects of this are going to impact the students. And we will just be there to make sure that you know, they can continue in a way that makes the most sense to them.
Mr. Salata?
At Health and Welfare, where I work, we work with people mostly who have pre-existing conditions, like I spoke to earlier, mental illness or PTSD or pre-existing conditions, and definitely seen some of those folks struggle with feelings of safety, security, increase in symptoms that were maybe a little bit more dormant or stable before, and that's, you know, they struggle along with their symptoms or their diagnoses and do okay, or with a lot of help they do okay or okay-ish or something. And then recently that's been harder for them, and a few people with maybe a little bit less supports or something like that or stronger symptoms have destabilized, quite frankly, and needed to come into emergency or hospital care. And it's definitely been noticeable for those folks.
Thank you, sir. I'll answer that one a little bit, too, from the perspective of the Recovery Center. That was kind of the impetus to why I had the idea to put this session together. My recovery coaches were commenting that some of the folks they were seeing were talking, obviously, about the incident, were a little bit extra nervous. And it struck me that while the university has been having an excellent response, nobody had coordinated a community-wide response, so I thought I'd step in a little bit and try and get all these resources together. And really the nice thing about this is we're here talking about this today due to that horrifying incident, but these resources are here every day, all the time, for anybody that needs to participate for other reasons too. So that's my little bit. Any other questions? Miranda. So let me repeat that for the folks that are recording. Trying to summarize, for students that are on campus, how can they best protect themselves when they may or may not be sober, trying to get from point A to point B, or off campus?
So usually when those situations do come up on campus in the past, Moscow Police Department will respond to the area depending on what's going on, if the call was generated towards them. And then they will essentially call you a taxi, sir. Like, they'll just call you the next taxi that's available. We don't have that option in the county. So in the past, many times we have just provided a ride to the individual who has drank too much or used too much, depending on the circumstances, unless it is a criminal act at that point. But yeah, if it's just somebody intoxicated walking on the side of the roadway, then we'll help facilitate a ride to their location that they need to be. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Yeah. On to that. Just a very quick add-on to that. Our public safety department has SafeWalk, and they have expanded that not just on campus, but also a couple of blocks off campus to incorporate a lot of the student, you know, more localized student housing. They have also, at least for the remainder of this semester, also incorporated a safe ride program, and they're going to see if they can't continue that for the remainder of the year as well, potentially longer. The question was if it's published anywhere, where the radius is. I believe it's on the public safety website, like with the SafeWalk. I have not looked at that though, so it would be with the SafeWalk program.
Thank you both for those great answers. I do want to point out that the Moscow Police Department was also invited here, but they're a little bit busy right now, so they had to send their regrets. Any other questions? We got plenty of time. If not, I see a question. Emily, how do you guys take care of yourselves? Who wants to go first? All right, Joyce.
I'm a real proponent of self-care. And I think there's a balance. We can't do our jobs unless we balance that. And I think every professional here will agree to that too. So while I have certain things that I do to take care of myself, I know that my colleague Doug over here has different things. So it's not a one prescription fits all. But unless we take the time to take care of ourselves, we can't take care of anyone else. It's the same as we do at the crisis center. I have to take that deep breath and say, am I okay, before I talk to somebody that's in crisis. I have to be grounded. And so I'm sitting among people that I know, and I know that they're taking care of themselves or they wouldn't be here today. So just remember that, and just advice to everybody in the community. Do what you need to do. And when I said, you know, just find somebody to talk to, if you say things out loud, they mean something different. You take care of your own anxieties if you have someone that you can talk to about them. So, you know, practicing that, whether it's from a biblical standpoint, in our religious communities, wherever you feel comfortable. Don't do it with your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend, but find that person that you can sit there and talk with. My person is Chris. I can sit and talk with Chris, and she makes my day brighter. So find a person that you can sit and talk with, and don't use them as a counselor, and you'll know the difference whether you need to go see your counselor or go to the crisis center or call Doug or go to the CTC. You'll know that. But if it's just like, I just am feeling a little off today and I need to bounce some things off of my friend. So taking care of yourself is all about balance.
Greg?
For the Moscow School District, there's two things. I want to go back to one of the questions. Are we seeing an impact? And to be honest with you, we are not seeing a large impact with our students. We decided not to discuss this with our students due to the level of, you know, of crisis that it was, and just watch the kids and listen to the parents. And I think that's helped because we wanted to be a safe spot for them because we knew some kids were going home and seeing that stress on their parents and just giving them an option to just be a kid at the school. For our staff, I will tell you, after COVID and everything going on, our number one goal that we put, which is typically an educational one, is this one. This year, our goal for the district was to be kind to others and write a goal of how they were going to help make that happen. And we were really pushed on that. We've been also doing a lot of different things that we can provide our staff for their health purposes. I would say for myself, my dog wants to walk all the time, and so she's been my go-to person.
I just wanted to speak to your question, Emily. I think it's also really important that obviously people in the audience are probably care providers, and they're here because they want to help other people in the community and stay safe. But recognizing your own moments of grief in this process, I feel like I've had a kind of a solid kind of disposition for the whole time. And when I was at the vigil the other night and I saw Sigma Chi starting to walk out, that was it. I just started crying like a baby. And typically in years past, I'd be like, clean it up. What are you doing? You're at work. And I just said, you know, just go with it and allow that vulnerability allowing that moment of, look, this is all right, you're all right, I was able to pull it together so much faster. And so often we get in these roles of being in that helping profession and as case managers, and you just never know who's coming through that door. Give yourself that self-compassion and really lean into your own moments of joy in this process and of, you know, just saying, all right, you know, I got through the day, I got through my classes, this hot chocolate is so good right now, and I also feel like crud, I think is important to recognize.
I work at Gritman, and one of the things we've done is recognize that this event has affected all of our staff, whether they have a connection at campus or not. Many people have their own adult kids the same age or kids in school, and so we've really recognized that any response people are having is normal. And so we've set aside a couple times a week, an hour here and there, where anybody that wants to can come and eat lunch together or have coffee together and just have some extra support, just to encourage staff to, you know, have more camaraderie and kind of checking in with each other. And if you see someone that you think is struggling, bringing them along, or just kind of checking in and testing everybody's stress and what supports we can offer.
Anybody else?
Just from as a minister of a congregation here in the community, it has been clear that through these sorts of events, it just has shaken a lot of the ideas that we don't challenge in our minds, those of death and what happens. And when that happens, And it's such a tragedy to see that unfold amongst young people at the prime of their life, right? One of the reflections when it comes to walking into that and how to minister to people without getting into an unhealthy space, I've just realized it's a exercise of examining my own heart. You know, there's a scripture that says, out of the heart, the mouth speaks. And I find myself in moments of ease, and generally when I'm not at work, I'm hanging out with my family, my mouth says stuff that is an invitation to pause and to do some of that work. And so I'd be like, wait, why did that come out of me? It's because there's something inside of me that needs to be examined and looked at. And so that's been a helpful tool for me. So,
anybody else? I believe Johnny says he has a question.
Thank you, Daryl. Thank all of you for being up here today. I'm John Kellis. I volunteer at the Recovery Center and also work a radio program called Recovery Radio on KRFP. And my question to the panel in general is, this will be a hot topic for a short time, but the healing process for a lot of people, including myself, can go on for a lot longer time. Do you have any plans, or how are you looking forward to the future and continuing this type of outreach that we're really enjoying today?
I know a lot of, especially what Daryl does at the Latah Recovery Center, has much to do with the continual connection and community interactions, very much in the faith communities, and realizing that we need friends who understand us, who are there every day of the week, and that we get to do life with. And as the waves of grief and these things come back up in our minds, and they will, and I think there's a delayed response that I'm seeing in our own ministry. It's like people are in shock right now. In 3 months, in 6 months, some of this stuff will settle into like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. That's the time. And I really am just so sure that it comes down to a community that is connected, that can channel people to the resources that make sense to minister to them, and really to be able to be known and to know other people well. And so I think that's got to be the drum that we just beat in any circumstance of life. You know, people were suffering before this happened in our community, you know, just realizing that it's going to look very different. They may not come and say, because of these awful murders, I need help. You know, it will present in probably a lot of other ways.
I would also say, you know, there's been a pretty good foundation of working together. During the COVID times, I know I was on a weekly Zoom meeting with the city, with the county, with the University of Idaho, with Gritman Hospital. I bet I had probably about 4 or 5 Zoom meetings every week of talking with different groups. And that's just a great foundation right there that we can just build off of. So that's one thing I'm very proud of our community with.
I think as a community, as an individual, we all process grief a little bit differently. And, you know, everywhere from let's get over it to how do I go through the process of grief? How do I go through the phases of grief? And, you know, they've outlined it psychologically beautifully. And my own philosophy is we incorporate it into our life, so it becomes part of our experience. And so what we have to do is accept that for our whole community, too, but accept the people that come to us that they're at a very different place than we are in the grief process or in their grief process, and they have a different relationship to what happened. And allow them to talk, because this affects a 20-year-old or a 23-year-old entirely different than it affects me. I went to the University of Idaho, graduated a couple times, but, you know, and it affects me differently because I have grandchildren at the University of Idaho right now who knew these people than it affects, you know, maybe Bruce here or maybe Daryl here. So if we meet the people that we're dealing with, whatever walk, wherever we are in the community, and meet them where they're at, we can grow from it. Grief doesn't just stop. It isn't over in a year. It isn't over. It comes and goes in waves. So we just need to learn as a group as a community to meet people where they're at and actually celebrate where they're at and accept who they are.
I'd just like to say that in regards to how I'll speak for a body and mind that I'm representing, we provide long-term counseling. You know, we are happy to help in crisis situations, and we will also do, you know, short-term, I want to learn coping skills for anxiety, you know, a couple months and then you're good to go. But we have also seen clients that are there for a year, 2 years longer, and so our counselors are happy to provide that ongoing service because it absolutely is something, you know, 3 months in, you think you're good, and then maybe something will pop up on the news and, oh, well, maybe I'm not quite as far along in that recovery as I thought that I was, or there's something else that's come up, and so we're happy to continue with that ongoing process. And I think also some of the community-based services can help with that a lot as well. For what we provide, we do peer support, case management, and CBRS primarily, CBRS being community-based rehabilitation services. And those are all with a paraprofessional, so someone who has a bachelor's degree and is helping in the community or in the home. So with some of those things later on of, you know, if you've kind of isolated out of this event, which is an absolutely reasonable response, but getting back into the community, going back out to coffee shops or community events or things like that, we have providers that will happily go with you to do those things.
Anybody else? So for the radio purposes, I'll way oversimplify and say, what are we as a community doing for folks that are being triggered by this because of past trauma?
Also, as professionals and organizations, we need to recognize and be vulnerable that we may not be the stop that that person that's approaching you needs. So I might get somebody in who is very traumatized by this, but I'm not the expert in trauma resolution. Maybe Doug is, maybe Kathy is, and be willing to warm hand off, say, you know, say, yeah, I'm going to help you, but the best help I can be to you is to get you to the right person. Because we're not all the same up here. We probably serve different populations. So be vulnerable enough to say, I'm not the expert in this, and get them to the right place.
I'm not the expert, like my mantra. Who else? Anybody?
Just as best as a person can who may have something pre-existing or has experienced trauma before, I think what I would say is to kind of have an internal and external plan. Like, so an internal plan is, what do you do when you feel, you identify that you've been triggered by something and you're not feeling well? What are the coping skills that have worked historically? And to remember to use those again, whether it's that breathing, mindfulness stuff that counselors teach us, or exercise, or reaching out to somebody. But then also having an external plan about, you know, who to contact, who to reach out to, what friends, family, community resources that that you're aware of that you can reach out to, and just kind of have that at the ready so that when that feeling of being triggered hits you, you don't know what to do, and you're not just lost and swimming in it.
Chris first, then my wife. Go, Chris. Thank you, Chris. So summarizing that for my radio friend there, you're with the Willow Group out of Lewiston, and they've got programs for 19 to 29-year-olds dealing with grief and families and children. Thank you for that addition. Anything else? Sure.
So my name's Alyssa Keim. I'm in charge of employee training at the University of Idaho. Also a community member that works with a lot of youth and other community members. And I'm wondering if there's an opportunity for some trauma-informed response training for our employees and community members. I think it's going to be so critical moving forward.
Any takers? Yes, Carrie.
I love that you brought that up, and yes, I would love to see that for the university community. I think that with everybody figuring out how to navigate this and everybody having very different roles, I would love to see CETL put on some trauma. I know they've done some, but doing something for faculty who are magnificent in their fields, but they aren't always adept at how to navigate classroom response, and they have to try to keep it very standard, and they've had a long time, some of them, trying to practice that. But we've done some trauma-informed training in our office, and we found it incredibly helpful in terms of leading with empathy, in terms of meeting people where they are. All of that is so important, and I think that it's a great way to infuse empathy when maybe that isn't someone's first response. but I think that it's a really good idea.
Any other questions? Go for it. So LifeBridge is also available as a resource with EMDR and other trauma-based services. All right. I do appreciate all you guys coming out, taking some of your lunch and some of your work day. If you liked this presentation, it was recorded, and hopefully the recording turns out well, and I'll have it up on YouTube later this afternoon. Please feel free to share it with other folks. Thank you all for coming.